Welcome to Inside the Mortgage Mind, a Zenix podcast where you'll hear stories from professionals throughout the industry, from new LOs to CEOs, about their journey to achieving success. We hope these stories inspire and energize you to take your business to the next level.
All right, so Jeff McGinnis, Casey Cunningham, how are you today?
Doing great, Casey. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Thank you. Blessed beyond measure, blessed beyond what I deserve, but I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. All right. So the new president of Waterstone as of November of last year. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So I'm going to guess you dove right in. And so why don't you share a little bit right now? What are your greatest priorities for Waterstone?
Yeah, you know, it's part of it is really taking an assessment on all that we went through in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so much of that was about survival and really kind of this combination of, you know, the pandemic and having everyone shift to home office, but just the sheer amount of volume. And, yeah. You know, I think we did an outstanding job at that, but along the way, you kind of pick up bad habits, right? Or you pick up some inefficiencies, or you haven't been paying attention to the basic blocking and tackling infrastructure things you should be really focusing on. So we're really kind of taking this year to really kind of call out each of those things that maybe during a different time, you just kind of let it roll because you're really just absorbing volume and trying to get pipeline through and really focusing on what are those things in 22 and 23 that are going to be critical to our competitive posture in the market. So it's a lot of it, you know, comes down to it's a lot of the basics. A lot of it, I hate to be cliche about it, but it is back to the basics. Sure. And now, granted, the basics have changed somewhat because we do have a remote workforce by and large today. Mm-hmm. And so those look differently, but we're really focusing on what are those core infrastructural things that maybe have been neglected over the past year? And how do we kind of make sure that they are executed on? For really, you know, as I've looked at 21, it is a year of opportunity to prepare for kind of what this next market is in 22 and 3. And of course, you know, we all have our views on that and we've got all of our economic forecasts. But, you know, I look at whatever 21 is giving us by way of this lasting refinance activity as sure. That gift in that space and time to figure that stuff out.
It is a gift of time. I mean, you really take it that consideration that we know what's coming. Sure. Everybody's trying to guess the timing of it, right? Yeah. But if you work as diligently now preparing, not knowing the timing, you will be prepared. So what do you think, how much longer do you anticipate, and this is a crystal ball question,
yeah,
that we'll have this ample volume of business?
Yeah, it's so hard to say. If you had asked me, last Wednesday, I might have had an answer, and then Thursday, Friday happened, right?
Right.
And so it's kind of crazy. You know, I do think about, you know, what are those basic tenets of what will have to happen economically at the broader economic level in order for rates to rise up and on a consistent basis. And, you know, I guess I subscribe to the theory that whatever that looks like and whatever that healing process looks like for the economy, that it won't be a straight line, that we're going to have these lumpy moments. And which I think for mortgage lenders will put a kind of a really additional strain, because I think we'll have these periods in time that we will have really fruitful refinance markets. And so rather, and we're an organization, by the way, who really, really focuses on the purchase business. And you hear that a lot, but we do. We're 100% retail and it's what we do. But having said that, I think there'll be these episodes that happen where there's a really favorable rate environment and we'll see an onslaught of refinance activity. And those may spread out a month, 2 months or 3 months, but I think they're going to put additional challenges on. You know, it's one thing when it just kind of kept coming at us in a steady, you can always accommodate to speed and velocity.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's that change and disruption, I think, that will create even more challenges.
Sure. When you decided to take over Waterstone, I'm guessing that you're evaluating the culture, and culture is obviously the destiny of almost all of us, right? Sure. The reality is we're made up of our people, and our people create a culture, and we lead that. What are you hoping? What is the culture like today at Waterstone, and where are you hoping to take it?
Yeah, it's you nailed it. And that's funny because we haven't even talked about it, but the culture was really appealing to me. And in particular, the people who make up that culture. It was one of those interesting processes where, by the way, we did it all by video right up until the very end when I was able to meet face to face with people. And with each and every person I met, you know, kind of this quality of character, quality of integrity came out, but also the level in which they perform their jobs. And that, you know, the pride factor that comes with that. And that kind of all culminates into, you know, at Waterstone, the word you hear a lot is family. And and I know other organizations say that, but, you know, that kind of manifests on a daily basis where, you know, when things happen, it's addressed in kind of in an environment that is really mindful of that family, right? So when we think about things by way of change, it's how it's affecting that family dynamic. And so, you know, so when I think about that, and of course, you know, we are in the talent business, right? And we continue to have, as most do, a very high desire to grow. And so that is a huge variable in my mind, that as we bring new talent into the organization, that they are that cultural, character, integrity, family values fit. So it really kind of, for me, it promotes a moment of clarity, right? You've got performance, and we all know you can get performance without those other characteristics.
Right.
But that really is a kind of a sorting out that we're purposeful about. And it's part of the dialogue. It's part of the structured dialogue around the decision tree of, you know, do we move forward with this candidate or not?
So we're in a new remote world and trying to preserve that family culture. Is there anything specifically that you're doing today to help ensure that you don't lose what is so beautiful about your company?
Yeah. So what is that axiom? If you think you're communicating enough, you need to do more. Mm-hmm. And we're really kind of focusing on a couple of different areas. And of course, to your point, it's all visual, right? So lots and lots of structured one-on-ones, and those are intended. So at our company headquarters, we have a cafe, and it's not uncommon that you'd be walking the halls, grab somebody for a cup of coffee, and go to the cafe. So we have these kind of structured meetings, one-on-one, where it's meant to emulate that which naturally occurs in the hall always, right? Hey, what are you doing? Let's go grab a cup of coffee, talk about this issue. And they're episodic, and they don't know hierarchy. It's just names mixed and matched with names, and we make sure that those one-on-ones are happening throughout the course of a week. And then on top of that, we have a series of communication meetings, and it may be with certain levels of managers, it may be all employee, but we're having those with the idea that we have to keep this steady stream of communication up, and we have to keep everyone on message. So it's kind of this purposeful, what did we say we're going to do to start the year? How are we doing with it? What are some of the obstacles? What are we navigating around? And the one of the key elements that we're adding into that is we ask all levels of the organization to take ownership of those meetings from time to time. So it's just not the executive team or the senior leadership team putting these meetings on, right? Because we have a view of what we think people need to hear, and we'd prefer them to tell us and what's important to them. And so I will tell you, it takes a lot of effort. You do need to be mindful and purposeful and have a tremendous amount of intention around it. And at the end of the day, it still feels like it's still less than we've been accustomed to.
You know, it's interesting. We have a lot in common. We actually do a, and I'm not sure how often do you meet with the whole company, but I do every Monday for an hour.
Sure.
And I share, you know, here's the wins from last week and here's what the priorities are for this week. Now I do that, the whole leadership team does. What we've decided to do, and we do that, by the way, every Monday, mm-hmm. what we've decided to do is give it over to a advisory team to say, how do you want our Mondays to look?
Sure.
And you can shift it, change it up. And we're going to do that every quarter to keep them fresh. Yes. So it doesn't feel stagnant.
I love that idea. So, yeah.
And we have our operating principles at our company are called peer. Everything we do, everything must be professional, effective, energizing, and relevant. Now, what's most important is the energizing piece because you want people to come to the meetings, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a professional meeting and it's got to be effective. But it's, and it'll be relevant, but we want to energize you to go take action from the meetings and not be a passive participant, but an active one. So anyway, we're doing the same thing. So I love what you're doing. I think we have a similar leadership.
Yeah, it's very cool. And, you know, fortunate with Zoom, you kind of get to see the numbers who are participating.
Right.
What you don't always know is the engagement level.
Right.
It is really nice to have various constituencies engaged at various times. And it just kind of, you know, after a while, you if you're dialing into these calls, I think about, you know, you hit that with the purposeful. It needs to add value. Right. At the end of the day, you're asking people to take time out of their day.
Right.
And so it needs to be interesting. It needs to have value. And you need to feel, you know, I think about it this way, that if I'm asking you to take that hour out of your day, I owe you that value. And if I get it right, you feel like you're missing something.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't dial in.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I've always been challenged when I hear that sales meetings or meetings in general are not well attended or nobody wants to go to them. And I always say, as a leader, we own that.
Yeah.
They should be excited about it being attended. And I happen to come from an organization where literally we couldn't wait to get to the meeting. So I learned from some of the most important our engagement processes. It's like when you go to a meeting, you should look forward to it, be excited about it, and walk out engaged or completely energized to take action on behalf of the company. So anyway,
sure.
I think we're similar to that. So how did you get to where you are today in your leadership role?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think a lot of really good mentors, for sure. You know, I've been fortunate to, I started my career at Norwest Mortgage, if you remember that name.
I do. I've been in this 30 plus years. I won't go there. But yes, I know Norwest.
And, you know, it was a great training ground. I started out as a loan officer and had a terrific manager during that point in time. And then as I wanted and had aspirations toward leadership, I just was, you know, really fortunate to have people in my life that kind of mentored me along the way. And in large part, even the mentoring was just by demonstration. You know, mm-hmm. so much of what we do in our industry is not structured. You know, we think about structured mentoring, and I'm not sure if I ever had that, but I had some really great leaders to emulate and invest in me and take chances. You know, I think about that all the time now in my role, that, you know, that thing that we do around taking a chance on somebody who maybe on paper doesn't have that pedigree to have that role.
Right.
And you take that chance on that person and you give them the proper guidance and resources and structure, and they amaze you.
Yes.
And
yes.
So, you know, I guess that would be, you know, my blanket answer is just really fortunate to be around some really great people in this industry.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We actually just got out of a meeting. We're talking about creating a formal mentoring program inside our company and making sure that there's structure to it, because we all believe exactly what you just shared. I didn't know you were going to share that, but we believe we're all where we are because of someone pouring into us and they mentored us, whether it was formal or not. And we want to be intentional inside our company to make sure everyone that wants a mentor has one. And we create structure around that so that the mentors are really helping to develop our next level of leaders. And so.
And it's a great, you know, there to me, and someone asked me a while ago, you know, where, and you may feel this at this point in your career, but it's the thing you value the most, right? That you are actually, if you could turn around and be meaningful to someone else's career. And I do think this industry does a really good job of that. Like I said, I've had people who didn't have to take that extra level of effort, or as I view it, is it's really an investment. You know, you're asking, you know how busy you are on a daily basis as an executive. Mm-hmm. And that's a decision you're making to invest in someone. And as much as I appreciated it at the time, I appreciate it even more now that I'm in those shoes, because I'm like, gosh, that your time is so limited on a daily basis. And you literally took the time for, you know, an hour a week with me. And it really is humbling.
You know, we are so on point, because I can promise you, I did not thank them near enough that I should have.
True.
When I look back going, man, some of the data points of who I am today is a result of things I watched them do or they shared with me.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of mentoring through observation. So I always encourage any leader who's listening in, whether is to know that your actions matter, your words matter, and that you're teaching through observation, whether you realize it or not. And so that's something that I walked away with, because there's many a times I saw a leader and said, I never want to be like that.
Sometimes there's that too.
That's who I want to be. And so you do learn, and just be cautious that your words matter. But I think they actually matter more in your senior role, of course, because it means so much when you speak into them. Do you feel that when you're in the day-to-day work?
Yeah, I do know, it's just this other dynamic you pick up where, you know, your title has magnitude. Mm-hmm. And if you're not aware of that, like you may say something that you may give someone direction that isn't as purposeful as it should, and they're going to run with it. And you may be like, whoa, I didn't intend you to run with it, but a title told that person to run with it. And you gotta be mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. How true is that? How true.
Yeah.
Well, let's end with a question that I'm curious. We all are a product of our mentors, and we all have a certain, I'll say, standard when we hire someone. What are the three most important attributes that you have in your leaders when you select them?
Yeah, to me, you know, the number one is character. It's the character of that individual. And you know, I always say it, you know, so character can be this subjective term, but to me, character is an evidence of the life that you've lived, right? And it's the decision-making in your life, right? Why did you choose this role? Why did you choose to leave this role? Why did you choose to leave this organization? Why did you choose to take this line of work? And so you can kind of really get into that person's character based on their decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And then the integrity piece of it, right? And the integrity around, and I do see that as kind of a distinction inside of the character, which is, and how upfront, straightforward, and honest are you in those dealings? And part of that is, you know, for example, tell me about your network, because your network tells me a lot about that character and integrity, right?
Yep,
there's a quality component of that. And at this point in my career, you know, it's one of the things I'm most proud of, is the network of people in this industry that if I got something going on and I need help, I can make a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
absolutely,
they're there for me. And that means a lot to me. And the last thing is, this is hard thing, but I give a lot of stock to people who invest in themselves, in their level of professionalism. And we've all seen this, and you in particular have probably seen loan officers who are wildly successful, but haven't consciously invested in developing their game.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why they got there. Sometimes it's just
a natural occurrence and they get
right. But when I see a documented process of somebody who consciously invested in their game, right? Mm-hmm. They invested in their own personal improvement. That wins me over.
Yeah, I am always challenged when I see anyone who's either, I'll say struggling, and they're not a student of their profession. And I'm about being a student of what you do every day. As an executive leader, as a salesperson, as a senior leader, whatever it might be, are you moving yourself forward and leaning into learning? Because the minute you think you know it all is the minute that you'll get replaced and/or you won't be respected, right? Yeah. So I so agree with you. I appreciate you bringing that up, because every time I interview someone, when they tell me their credentials of how much they're studying to be exceptional, that's really high on my list.
Yeah, and so much of that, and you keyed in on this word, but I think we all have the responsibility of staying relevant, mm-hmm. right? And it's so easy to say, and we both get to say, oh, I've been in this business for 30 years. It doesn't mean you got better.
Right, that is true.
Every single year.
I love the loan officer who says, I've been doing this for 5 years. I'm like, have you been doing it wrong all 5 years? I mean, I don't know. So the question is right. How have you progressed? How have you
accelerated? Every year, right?
Yeah, getting better every year.
For sure.
What a pleasure it is just to get to know you a little bit, Jeff. I hope that you'd come back and let me continue to interview you, because I think you've got a lot of wisdom in there to share.
Well, thanks for having me. And I hope this goes without saying, but you all have been just a terrific partner to us. As we continue to focus and investing in on our people, we'll come calling. You guys do a terrific job. So thank you for that. And thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. And you have a great day. And thanks for the kind words.
Thanks, Casey.
Take care.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to check back for new episodes of Inside the Mortgage Mind, a podcast by Zenix, the Mortgage Academy. You can download our episodes wherever you love to listen to podcasts or on our website at zenix.com/inside the mortgage mind.